WTTS on demand.
Hi, Rick.
Hi, Lori. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I know you're so busy, and we really appreciate you taking the time today. Thanks so much.
My pleasure.
Nice to have you back with the Cars. First time in the studio with a band in, what, 24 years?
Yeah, 25, 23, 21, I don't know, but it's plenty.
Wow. Move Like This, the name of the new album, that is out next Tuesday. Now, I know that you had a body of songs that you'd been working on, and what made you decide to take that collection of songs and present them with Elliot, Greg, and David? Why now?
Well, I guess life's short. That's one reason. I felt like that, you know, I would not have to teach people how to, you know, like play the songs or get people that I don't know that well, you know, other musicians, and just have a potpourri of, you know, independent musicians playing along with the record. I didn't want to do it all myself. And I kind of missed the guys, and I thought, well, I'll call them and ask them, because I knew that as soon as they walked through the door and we sat down to play, it would be just a completely natural thing, and it would be just as if, you know, we hadn't even been apart. And that's exactly what it was like.
Well, how do you think the reception has been from fans and the media?
So far, pretty good, I think. So far it's been pretty positive, and I'm kind of a little shocked and surprised that I'm waiting for the big... It's like been almost too good, and I feel like, you know, maybe I'm just not reading the right stuff.
Well, no, I think that you are. We're playing a couple of songs off the new album. I think they sound fantastic.
Oh, good.
Now, I want to take you back just a bit, and then I have a lot to ask about the new album. But talking about when you began, the Cars began back in the mid-70s and released one of the most focused and commercially successful debut albums in history with your self-titled. Now, it seemed that the success was immediate, but maybe you have just a little bit of a different take on the success of your debut album and the band's acceptance in general.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, the first album, I guess it, you know, ultimately was extremely successful, but for us, I think it was funny. That album went station by station, state by state, city by city. In those days, back in, you know, 79, whatever, mm-hmm. And it was still a time when radio, you know, I mean, DJs could play what they wanted to.
Yes.
You know, and that was like, if it wouldn't have been for that, probably would have never happened. So that, having that, you know, luxury was nice. But it got added little by little, you know, one station at a time. After we finished the record in London and came back, I thought it was just going to be like a kind of a local, you know, Boston kind of record. I really wasn't even prepared for it to be, like, played on the radio anywhere else or, you know, anything like that. So it was a big shock for all of us that it gathered so much attention.
So that's, the story must be true. We've all heard the story of the DJ at WBCN in Boston playing the demo of Just What I Needed, which grabbed the attention of Elektra Records and led to a contract. Is that really what happened?
Yeah, that's totally what happened.
Wow.
Exactly what happened.
So that was important. The DJs picked their own music.
Well, we had the, in Boston, we had the number one, on their radio, on BCN, it was the number one played song, or the number one requested song. And we didn't have an album out, or we didn't even have a CD. You know, we didn't have any of that stuff. It was just a demo. So, yeah, of course, the record companies came after that. And you know, we were pleased but shocked too.
Do you remember the feeling and emotion of hearing your song on the radio for the first time?
I kind of do, but it's hard to remember now, but I think I was just totally shocked to hear anything on the radio that I had ever done.
How many years did you ride the success of the debut album? You released your second not too long after the first in memory, but how long did that first album, you know, songs, all the songs from the album are still played on the radio today.
Yeah. Well, I think that first album was on the charts for a couple of years, you know, at least in the top 100. So they did, I think they even stalled the second album a little bit because the first one wasn't kind of finished for them. For the record company kind of thing. We kind of had, we already had the second album kind of done pretty soon after the first. I mean, not done recorded, but it was all written and everything. So even before it was the first album was a success, I think the second album was already kind of written, so it wasn't like a big pressure for me.
Well, you know, the sound of the Cars remained so consistent and very strong. You had 6 albums in 10 years, and I think all of those worthy of attention from fans and the media. But then Heartbreak City, a monster. And this is where MTV and the presentation of music videos really came into play for the band. Now, I really do consider the Cars innovators in this area of promotion in the 80s. It was a soundtrack to my youth. What do you think that the music videos presented by the Cars did for that particular album and just the band in general?
It definitely propelled it in a big way. I remember when we finished, we recorded that record in London, and I remember the president of the label came over. It took a long time because we were doing it with Mutt Lang, who takes an immense long.
Mm-hmm.
So 8 months later, the guy came over. Are you guys going to ever finish this record? And then he heard it, and then he said, "Oh, well, let's. I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to just do like 4 videos right away, before the record even comes out. Let's just do 4 videos." So we just, when we got back to the United States with the record, we really just went in and right in a row did 4 videos. We did Drive, You Might Think, Magic, and I can't remember, I think it was Why Can't I Have You, you know.
And You Might Think.
It was the first one, and we did that right, because we saw a commercial on TV that was for the National Enquirer, where there was a lot of cut and paste stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We said, well, who are those guys? We'd like to do that Mighty Python sort of cut and paste thing.
It worked very well.
Yeah, so we did that, and that became the video of the year. But it was cool for us because MTV was wanting videos.
Right.
They were calling our manager and saying, so, okay, you gave us 3, but don't you have 4 or 6 more? Because we don't really have enough material.
Yeah, I remember the rotation being the most popular videos like once an hour.
Exactly.
But, yeah, so you're in history as far as that goes for winning the very first MTV Video Music Award for Video of the Year, You Might Think, right?
Yeah, that's true.
You might think.
Who made the decision that this was the road to take? Because a lot of artists at that point were saying, videos cheapen my music. But really, the Cars embraced that.
I was saying it, too,
a lot.
You know, I was, like, really against doing videos in the beginning. I really kind of had to be talked into it. But I know people were saying that. And I could see their point, you know, because let the imagination flow, you know. Don't show people what you want them to hear.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But I guess a way around that kind of sometimes is just do a live video. But you know, we ended up doing it. You know, some were really cool and some are really suck.
Well, yeah, that's the way it goes. But I really do think, I mean, when I think back to that age and that era of videos, that the Cars, your videos were all entertaining.
Oh, yeah.
In some fashion. Very, very well done. And I think Timothy Hutton directed or produced one of yours, right?
Yeah, I did the video Drive, yeah.
Now, I was heartbroken. 1988, Cars announced you're breaking up.
Uh-huh.
Now, since that time, you have given us many solo albums, produced albums for Weezer and No Doubt and Suicide and Guided by Voices. There's so many.
Uh-huh.
You are considered one of the greatest producers. So many people have praised your work in this area. What is your biggest passion in regards to the roles you play in association with music?
Well, my passion is a songwriter.
Okay.
I mean, that's me. That's always been, you know, that's always been the thing that I was firstly wanting to do. It was always the thing I was involved in. And any of the other stuff could have just, you know, not been there. And also, secondly, love the technology and the actual, you know, art of making albums. And I always followed bands that I thought were artful, you know, if I wanted to produce things, I wanted to make sure that they were, you know, legitimate, real bands, you know, real with something really to say and the very different
I think you underestimate yourself. You're not just a songwriter. You write hits. You know how to write hits. And what does... Do you sit down? I don't even know the process because I'm just not that creative. You sit down and you have a thought in your head, and everything that you write is very hooky, very catchy, involves a lot of integrity, but it gets to the point, and it's you know, you can pick hits off every album from the Cars and, you know, songs that you've written on your own.
Yeah, I know, but I don't know how I do that, to tell you the truth. I don't know. I'm not a very good, like, song craftsman. I'm also not good at doing things on commission. Like, for instance, if somebody said, well, would you write me a hit song? Mm-hmm. I could never do it. I would just be lost. I think it maybe it's just because of quantity. you know, if I sit down to write, I might write 30 songs, and maybe just four of them might be, you know, appealing to the masses, you know, in a hit way, you know. But I don't really know which ones they will be, nor do I have any kind of formula for doing it.
Well, the new album, Move Like This, it was produced in part by Garrett Jackknife Lee. Now, how did you come to the decision that Garrett was the one you wanted for this project? We waited so long for this, and it must have been, you know, you had someone in your mind exactly what you wanted the album to sound like, and you came up with Garrett.
Yeah, I did. I had he was the only producer I had in mind, and didn't even know if he knew who I was or knew who the Cars were. I sent him an email and asked him if he'd be interested in recording a few Cars songs with the Cars, the remainder of the band, you know, and he sent back such a flattering email that I thought, wow, this must be the guy. But also loved what he did with Snow Patrol. And, you know, mostly it was really about Snow Patrol. I kind of thought that had a little bit of a Carsy touch to it. But I just liked the sounds he got a lot. I thought he sounded like he did a really modern job with it. And I thought, well, you know, he's the most modern sounding guy I hear around these days. So ask him.
You know, I've listened to the album a few times now, and I really do get a sense of familiarity, but there's also a very definite progression and forward movement with the band's sound. It has to be difficult. How difficult is it to keep that balance intact with just enough comfort while still presenting a sound in touch with 2011?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. We didn't try to... It's just kind of, you know, when you rehearse and everything and you put that band together with those particular people in it, it just kind of comes out like it is. You don't really discuss, like, whether it sounds old, new, borrowed, or blue. You know, you just kind of do it. And
I think maybe I'm thinking there's way too much thought involved. It's just a creative process that flows, and what is, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I understand. Thank you. Now, I remember back in 2000, the loss of Benjamin Orr. It was heart-wrenching for all of us as fans. I remember announcing that. I was actually on the air at the time, and I can only imagine the sense of loss you felt and still feel for Ben, who was a trusted member of your family.
Yeah, exactly.
And the band collectively decided not to replace Ben on bass with a new member on this album, but rather to have Greg take that role, which is a very, very classy move.
Yeah.
Even though you have the comfort of looking over and seeing Greg in that role instead of a new member, it must have just been very tough to get in the studio with the Cars for the very first time without Ben.
Yeah, it was. It was in the studio, and it also was at rehearsals. You know, when we first started to rehearse, I mean, nobody really mentioned it, but like, I know that when I looked around, I noticed that it wasn't enough people.
Right.
Like, one missing, for sure. And, you know, his input on, like, you know, vocals, and which are extremely important, and you know, bass and all that was a little nuts. But we actually... you know, I didn't think of it, of like, even, we certainly didn't want to, we were never going to replace him. It just had to be either the four or nothing. But I didn't really look at it like, okay, well, Greg's taking his place to play the bass, or, because it could have been Elliot or me or anybody could have played the bass. The bass part was not, you know, that was just a sound. and a part, you know, of a makeup of a of an arrangement. But the vocals and because you can duplicate a bass,
right?
You can't duplicate vocals and duplicate personality. You know, people could you know, duplicate an instrument.
And it was both Jackknife Lee and Greg that played bass on the album. Did they actually use Ben's bass?
Yeah, they did on some stuff, yep. Yeah, I think somebody brought it. I think David, the drummer, had one of Ben's basses, and I think he just brought it along, asked to use for an extra bass. And I think they ended up using it on a couple of songs, the actual bass. So
Ben's a part of the new album. I love that. You've announced 10 dates in North America. 10. And you begin next Tuesday in Seattle. It's a relatively short tour. How comfortable are you on stage, even at this point in your career?
What was that last part of the question? Sorry, hon.
How comfortable are you on stage, even with all the success and all the touring that you've done? Are you comfortable on stage?
I don't think I'm an entertainer.
Oh, we beg to differ. We believe that you are.
I think I can play the songs. I think I'm not good at prodding the audience. You know, I'm sort of not like that kind of a... I've been playing for, like, you know, 35, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's pretty second nature to, you know, play in front of people. It's not about that. It's really just not having kind of a show business kind of attitude towards the whole thing. It's more like, you know, play the songs. A lot of bands I love... you know, it's just, I guess it's just, a, you know, some people are really good, like, at performing, but I'm really better as a songwriter. I'd be like the songwriter who's singing his own, you know, singing the song.
Well, do you plan on announcing more tour dates, or is this enough for you?
I think this will be good for a while, and okay. We'll see what happens after this.
Now, lastly, but probably most important, how's the family? You have 6 kids, right?
My family?
Yes, your family.
Oh, my family's wonderful. Just absolutely wonderful.
Grandchildren?
I have grandchildren and everything, yep. I have
wow.
A whole bunch of them.
Well, congratulations on a long marriage and a very happy family and your career.
That's sweet. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for getting back with the Cars. As fans, we are thrilled, and I'm going to travel up to Chicago. I'll see you on the 18th.
Wonderful. I can't wait to see you then.
The new album from the Cars, Move Like This, it's due next Tuesday, May 10th. Rick, thanks so much.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Have the best day of your life.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Too many screamers wearing a mask. Too many dreamers looking for the ones at last. Too many eyes looking for hope. Too many tears looking for a way to cope. It's no joke.
WTTS. On demand.